This Weekend starts right after this.
Did you know that more and more businesses are switching to Vonage? Seems like they know something you don't know, like how they can unify all their offices nationwide on their own private connection to the cloud. Or maybe they're saving tons of headaches by eliminating unwieldy PBX phone systems. Make the switch to better. Call 1-800-5-VONAGE or visit Vonage.com and find out why so many businesses are switching. That's 1-800-5-VONAGE or Vonage.com. Vonage, the business of better.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Fighting political nastiness. I'm Gordon Deal, along with Bruce Johnson, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka. Thanks for spending part of this final weekend before Christmas with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
The political polarization in the U.S. is arguably at its worst point in a couple of decades, but a number of groups have dedicated themselves to ending it. Find out what they're doing.
An average pitcher proved this past week why it makes more sense to be a pro baseball player than a pro football player. That story in about 10 minutes.
Hollywood needs a lifeline after a poor 2015. Can Star Wars The Force Awakens come to the rescue?
And how the Trans-Siberian Orchestra brought rock and roll to Christmas music.
They are more, even more than their role in terms of selling Christmas albums, which is a big industry, as people know. Quietly, they've become a touring juggernaut. You'll see the likes of, obviously, U2 and Rolling Stones and Lady Gaga and One Direction, Metallica. And then you'll see Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Wall Street Journal reporter Neil Shaw on TSO in about 20 minutes. Well, a recent study by Pew finds that we as voters have more intense animosity toward our opposition than at any point in the last 20 years. But Rebecca Nelson at National Journal finds some people have had enough. She spoke with organizations declaring a war on partisanship. Rebecca is No Labels, one of these groups.
Yeah, I go into a lot about No Labels. They're probably the most well-known, most prominent in this space. And they are very of Washington. They're very inside the Beltway, run by a veteran Democratic operative. And they're working really to stem this tide of polarization in Washington among lawmakers.
Got it. All right. So besides No Labels, what other groups are out there say that, you know, maybe are not D.C. insiders like you mentioned?
Yeah. So there's one group that I spoke with, Living Room Conversations. And that is really focused. It's hyper-local. The whole idea is, you know, you have a conversation in your own living room with someone of a different ideology, and you talk out a very political issue. They talk about race, mental health, criminal justice reform, immigration. And the idea is, if you're in someone's living room, hopefully you won't go on the defense or make partisan attacks. You know, you have that sense of a guest and a host, and you're more just nice to each other.
Back, I guess, to kind of a different point here. These groups, do they feel they're making progress? Do they have evidence that they're making progress of maybe toning down the nastiness?
Yeah, so the evidence sort of point of that is really difficult to determine. No Labels, for example, holds up, you know, they championed this bill, No Budget, No Pay, in 2013. So if Congress didn't pass a budget, they wouldn't get paid. And they hold that up as a victory. But really, when that bill was finally passed, the final language said, you know, Congress will get paid, just not right away. And that's something they tout as a huge accomplishment. Another group, the Village Square, I spoke with, one of the more local groups, they're in Tallahassee. I asked, you know, how can you tell if your efforts are working? And the director of that organization told me, in all, you know, earnestness, you can just feel it here. So
really?
It's really tough to determine whether their efforts are working.
Well, we're speaking with Rebecca Nelson, political reporter at National Journal. She's also a White House correspondent there. And she's got a look at the kind of the partisanship here, and her piece is called The War on Partisanship, How Fighting Polarization Became Its Own Cause. Are there some who criticize groups like No Labels, for example, as folks that are just unwilling to fight hard for what they believe in?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not sure if it's that they're unwilling to fight hard for what they believe in. Most of the criticism, I think, or of the people that I've spoken with was, you know, they're just so misguided. Why do they think they could have a hope of making a dent in this? Bill Bishop, he wrote this book, The Big Sort, which documents this phenomenon in the last 40 years or so where Americans have started moving and sorting themselves geographically. You know, liberals tend to move to certain neighborhoods, or probably most of Austin, and conservatives move to smaller towns, and these communities become echo chambers of political thought and political ideology. So Bill, when I spoke with him, said, you know, they are just totally working against the tide. And their conferences, I'm sure, are great, but what is it actually doing on the ground?
I guess one of the broader questions here, too, is how did we get so polarized?
Yeah, it's really the best that I could tell. Everyone had so many different theories on this, but there are a lot of different factors. One was that we no longer have a common enemy. You know, during the Cold War, we could unite against the Soviet Union. And so some people say we need to find what political scientists call a cross-cutting issue. Maybe that's criminal justice reform. That's seen some bipartisan support on the Hill. At the congressional level in Washington, the culture of Congress has changed. Newt Gingrich, in 1994, he started discouraging members from moving to Washington. So they didn't live, they didn't move their families to D.C., they didn't interact with people of other parties. So there are a lot of different factors here, and that's part of what makes it so hard to combat.
Thanks, Rebecca. Rebecca Nelson, White House reporter at National Journal. It's 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. With the holidays almost here, you don't have time to go to the post office. The traffic and parking are terrible. It'll be packed with everyone mailing holiday gifts and packages, so you should use Stamps.com instead. With Stamps.com, you can avoid all the hassle of going to the post office during the busy holiday season. Everything you would do at the post office, you can do right from your desk. Buy and print official U.S. postage using your own computer and printer. Then print postage for any letter or package the instant you need it. Next, the mailman picks it up. That easy and convenient. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer that includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Deal. That's Stamps.com. Then enter the code DEAL. On the sports front, fascinating story in the Washington Post about differences between pay among professional football players and baseball players. Reporter Barry Sverluga takes a look at the massive new contract signed by ordinary Giants pitcher Jeff Samardzija and compares it with money being earned by top NFL wide receiver Calvin Johnson of the Lions. Barry, explain.
Well, basically what you're looking at is a ton of money pouring into baseball, and pouring not just into baseball as a $9 billion industry, but pouring directly to the players. You know, in the NFL, which is definitely the king of American sports right now, people set their week around their football games, and really it draws more eyes and more attention than anything else. But I took a look at two guys from the 2007 NFL draft, two receivers, one being Calvin Johnson, a guy that most sports fans would know, the star receiver for the Detroit Lions, and Jeff Samardzija, who was a receiver at Notre Dame back then, and had a choice to make, a choice not many people get to make, but he was good enough to be a pitcher in the majors, and he was good enough to play receiver in the NFL. He chose to play baseball. What does that mean? Well, Calvin Johnson, who's probably a shoe-in Hall of Famer and maybe the best receiver of his generation, has made $113 million, had a great career in the NFL, very, very lucrative. Jeff Samardzija just signed a 5-year, $90 million contract with the San Francisco Giants as a free agent that will take him to when he's 35 years old. That will bring his career earnings guaranteed to $122 million. So basically what you're saying is a run-of-the-mill baseball player can out earn one of the best players of his generation in football. And if anybody had a choice, both for safety and financial reasons, it seems like baseball's the winner.
Boy, it's incredible. All right, so how does this happen, I guess? Because I always think, well, the NFL is just this absolute money machine, but does baseball have more to throw around?
Well, the weird thing is that baseball has always had a stronger union than the NFL has, and they're going back to the 70s when Marvin Miller first formed the Players Association. Baseball has a track record of earning more of the overall take for the players than football does. There's also a sheer math equation that goes on here too. There are 45 players who dress every Sunday for a football team. There are 25 players on a Major League Baseball roster. 53 players are carried by an NFL team during the season. So even if you're looking at about the same revenue, you've got to spread it around to almost twice as many players. So that's an easy, kind of simple math equation that affects the earnings of a football player versus a baseball player. The other thing I would point out is that baseball players, if you're an established major leaguer, your career is just going to simply be a lot longer than an NFL player. Calvin Johnson has been in the league since 2007. There's a lot of talk in Detroit now about how much longer he has. He admits his body is beat up. He's going to be 31 next year. And there's a legitimate question about how much further he can go. Jeff Samardzija, in a way, is just kind of entering his prime as a baseball player. He's got this five-year deal to bring him to age 35, and there's every reason to believe he'll be able to dip into the pool one more time after that. So longevity plays into it as well.
Wow. We're speaking with Barry Svrluga, national baseball writer at The Washington Post. His piece is entitled, Jeff Samardzija Just Proved Athletes Would Be Foolish to Pick Football Over Baseball. All right, so you mentioned the word guarantee also. That's a significant difference in the use of that between the two leagues also, right?
Yeah, that's a huge, huge factor. Baseball contracts are, by definition, guaranteed. If you sign a major league contract, as Samardzija did, he could pitch terribly next year, and the Giants are on the hook for that $90 million over the next five years. Calvin Johnson signed an extension after 5 years in the league with the Lions. It was billed as a seven-year, $132 million extension. Well, if he maxed everything out in that deal, that's exactly what it could be. But the reality is, when you hear those numbers tossed around in football, almost no one ends up making every dollar in their deal. The key number there is what's guaranteed. In this case, in Johnson's case, it was $60 million. He's definitely going to get that amount of money. But, and this works great for football owners, if a player underperforms, or if a player gets injured, or if a player becomes too expensive as he gets later in his career, you can cut the player and not be on the hook for the remainder of that contract. That is not the case in baseball. So from a player's perspective, it's a lot easier life because you're not worried about what might happen the next season to your contract.
Well, that is really something, isn't it? Reporter Barry Svrluga at The Washington Post. It's 21 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. One song I can't get out of my head this time of year when I hear it on the radio, and I don't mind it either. This one, Christmas Eve Sarajevo by Trans-Siberian Orchestra, right? Who doesn't go dun 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 dun? This weekend's Bruce Johnson has a look at how the metal band figured out how to bring rock and roll to Christmas.
We are chatting now with Neil Shaw, staff reporter for the Wall Street Journal, about his article in the paper entitled How the Trans-Siberian Orchestra Became a Holiday Hit Machine. TSO, a well-known group to a lot of people. Talk about the origins of Trans-Siberian Orchestra back in the day when they were a bombastic metal band.
Well, basically, Trans-Siberian Orchestra had a previous incarnation back in the 80s. Essentially, it was a metal band, kind of a what some people call a progressive rock metal band that put out some pretty good albums, especially in the mid to late 80s, but didn't completely take off. And what's fascinating about their story is how they went from being a band that was dropped by their label, Atlantic Records, during that period into a huge multi-million dollar, $20 million plus holiday touring production like it is now.
You know, on these reality TV singing competitions nowadays, you hear the judges say, you've got to find your lane, what kind of music you want to put out there. You talk about a group like Trans-Siberian Orchestra, they found their lane. They brought rock and roll to Christmas.
They absolutely did. So essentially, the founder of TSO, a man named Paul O'Neill, has always had ambitions to have this kind of show. And at a certain point in the 80s, this struggling metal band, Sabotage is the name, was kind of on the rocks. Fast forward a little bit to 1995, they put out a project called Dead Winter Dead. It's actually it's a love story set in the Bosnian War. Well, at the end of that album, it's the penultimate song, the second to last song, there is a song that's kind of themed for Christmas called Christmas Eve, Sarajevo 1224. Well, and this is the improbable part, the album doesn't do really well, but come the holidays in 1995, essentially, this starts getting picked up. A radio programmer in Florida, where the band originally were from, starts playing it, starts calling other higher-level radio folks who get enthused about it, and eventually on some of the biggest stations in the country at that time, 1995, it's the top request. And I don't mean holiday music request. I mean of anything.
And here we are now in 2015, and Trans-Siberian Orchestra is filling large arenas routinely. In fact, in 2014, TSO generated more ticket revenue than the likes of Elton John, Lady Gaga, and the country group Zac Brown Band.
Yeah, that's right. They are even more than their role in terms of selling Christmas albums, which is a big industry, as people know. Quietly, they've become a touring juggernaut. I mean, year after year, if you look at Polestar data numbers showing, you know, who are the biggest tours in the country, again, just all tours, not just holiday tours, you'll see the likes of, obviously, U2 and Rolling Stones and Lady Gaga and One Direction, Metallica. And then you'll see Trans-Siberian Orchestra fairly high up. Billboard did an analysis. TSO has been touring for about 15 years now. They started in 1999 and 2000. Billboard did a study a while ago pointing out that TSO is among the top 25 touring acts, all kinds of touring acts, of the entire 2000s. So they've built up a fan base that really enjoys these shows. And the thing is, it really has become something of a modern holiday tradition for families. In talking with people, I came across many people who've been to the show several times. Live Nation has some data pointing out that roughly half of the people that go to TS shows have been there before.
That's this weekend's Bruce Johnson with Wall Street Journal reporter Neil Shaw. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. We'd love to welcome a new sponsor to the show, All and Sundry, a modern men's shoe company with an old world vision. My friend Nick and his team make the finest handcrafted custom shoes, shoes your grandfather would be proud of. All and Sundry creates a unique experience where you select your style of shoe, whether for work or play. Then you choose the material, add custom features like eye stays, then select a color. They source all the materials and build each one by hand. Without a middleman, you get the savings. No more outrageous markups. If you're a shoe guy, All and Sundry is for you. If you're not, you might change your mind after seeing All and Sundry. Right now, get a 10% discount on a gift card for the holidays. Visit allandsundry.com and enter the promo code DEAL at checkout. That's AWL and sundry.com. Then enter DEAL at checkout. All and Sundry, stylish and modern shoes with craftsmanship a grandfather would be proud of. Again, allandsundry.com and enter code DEAL. Is it possible for technology to play a role in preventing terrorist attacks like the one in Paris last month? Tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal of the Enderle Group, says yes. Rob, how so?
With smartphones, you could really create an app for that. Simply by hitting a button, if you saw somebody that looked suspicious, and then the application triangulating a series of folks hitting that same button to establish whether or not the threat was real. And where it was, you would have tracking for where these people are. The app that could then tell people that were in the vicinity where to go to get away from the people that are doing the shooting, and route them to likely exits that would work, and even give them advice in terms of proximity as to what they should do. Should they lie down? Should they seek cover? Or should they just run like the devils behind them? So rather than being confused, lost, and at high risk, at least the folks would have a chance of getting out of the way of the danger, and law enforcement would have a running image of where the bad guys were and how to deploy their resources to stop them.
All right, so I'm not sure I'm clear. What are we saying to do with the smartphone or the app then? You're saying take a picture of the perp if possible?
What I'm saying is what we need is an app. So call it a terrorist app, call it a disaster app. But when you see something that looks like a problem, you hit the button, and then it asks you, so what is it you see? And you would have a series of choices, and you pop it, and then it would tell you what to do. If it's people running around shooting people, or if it's somebody that looks like they're going to shoot somebody, then take their picture. And then wait for the app to tell you what else to do. And because everybody and their brother has cell phones now, the way that the law enforcement would avoid false reports was you'd be looking for multiple report. So immediately we could scan the smartphones in the area, tell where the crowds were bunching, and rather than having crowds stampeding or trampling each other, spread them out to different exits and get them out of the building very quickly. Something like a Watson behind the scenes could analyze the overall scenario and then provide the best individual advice for the folks with the phones in terms of getting them out of danger, getting them to cover, and keeping the police informed as to the activity.
We're speaking with tech analyst Rob Enderle. He's got an interesting piece with regards to the attacks in Paris, and it's entitled How Technology Could Prevent Another Paris Tragedy. How difficult would something like this be to set up, trying to coordinate with, say, local, state, and federal law enforcement?
Well, so it actually wouldn't be very difficult at all. So it would have to be done with the carriers. So in other words, the carriers would have to cooperate, make the geolocation stuff available to the app. It would require somebody like Google that has the reach, or Microsoft, or somebody large, but Google would be ideal, who has the kind of reach necessary to drive the app through a lot of phones, because you'd want it to work on Android and Apple, at least Android and Apple for the first part. And then simply it would provide a feeder into the existing police alerting system as to the problem. Now, the heavy lifting at the back end might have to do with what kind of dashboard the police dispatch center would get with regard to how the folks are moving through. But remember, these guys have, in the places like England where they've got 80 million cameras, they're already set up with pretty good dashboards in terms of how to track stuff like this. This would simply provide another feed and another overlay as to information that's not coming in from those primary cameras.
It sounds like something out of Person of Interest on CBS, where this whole all kinds of facial scanning from even just traffic cameras or something.
Well, we already have that. So the technology out there for not only scanning faces but tracking the faces exists. A little known out division in EMC has been selling that for quite some time, and you can track from camera to camera, mostly for if you have a burglar or a terrorist or somebody that's committing a crime, they get picked up on the entry camera at a shopping center or whatever, and then once they capture the face, then you can follow that face through the overall sequence of events. Though for the most part, it's for evidence gathering after the fact. In this case, we'd be using to try to identify the attacker and track them real time, so we could reduce the amount of damage they could do and maybe eliminate it.
Thanks, Rob. It's tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal of the Enderle Group. 21 minutes before the hour on This Weekend.
When you run a small business, even the smallest decisions are stressful. But there's one that's easy. The decision to make your business better by switching to Vonage's award-winning cloud-based communication service. With seamless mobility between your devices, so your employees can connect with your customers while on the go. Call 1-800-5-VONAGE or go to Vonage.com to make the switch now. Call 1-800-5-VONAGE or sign up at Vonage.com. Vonage, the business of better.
Other companies talk about connecting with consumers, but Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman says few do it, as convincingly as Facebook has done lately. And that's just one reason the social media giant is the Yahoo Finance Company of the Year for 2015. Rick, give us some other reasons.
We decided Facebook was the company that met those standards this year. The stock did really well. It was up about 35% at last check. The overall markets are basically flat this year, so that's a strong performance there. It's around the seventh most valuable company in the United States, publicly owned company. I mean, it has gone from being sort of a social media fad or phenomenon to a very big and very valuable and very influential company.
Explain the part about mobile dominance, because this was a concern early on, correct?
This has become a standout feature of Facebook, which is they did not get this part of their business right at the beginning, and that was the shift from desktop devices to mobile devices, phones, smartphones mostly, obviously. They were behind on the shift to mobile, and Zuckerberg, the CEO, basically said at one point, okay, we're missing this, and we need to do a complete strategic shift, and mobile needs to come first now. Every product we develop, every kind of ad platform, and that's how they make their money through advertising revenue, needs to focus on mobile first. And they executed on that fantastically. They are now basically up there with Google as one and two, the best performance on mobile devices. They get more than three quarters of all their revenue now from mobile advertising, which is really remarkable.
We're speaking with Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman. He's got a piece about Facebook being their 2015 Company of the Year. All right, so on that note, you mentioned virtual reality, Facebook's entry into that arena. Explain that.
This is something most Americans don't really care that much about right now. It's mostly it appeals to gamers, but a lot of technology people think this is sort of the next big wave. Now, we know that social media is maturing. That's not a new thing anymore. Smartphones themselves are not a new thing anymore. The growth there is flattening out. Virtual reality is when you put on one of those goofy-looking headsets, and suddenly it's as if you are in the middle of whatever it is you're watching. So think about watching pro football or any kind of sporting event. It could be news events. It could be embedded military operations overseas. And suddenly, because of the way this is able to sort of immerse you in the experience, it's a whole new type of experience for you, the user, just sitting on your couch. So Facebook has invested in this. They've got the first big headset is coming out early in 2016. That will be associated with some new computers that sort of have to be modified for these headsets, and that'll be targeted at gamers. But you know, big media companies are very interested in this. I think all the TV networks, anybody who has a contract with one of the sports leagues is interested in it. And so the technologists are saying this is the next big thing.
Thanks, Rick. Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman.
You're a small to mid-sized business with 300 to 3,000 employees. You face the same network security challenges as big businesses do, but can't support a big IT investment, leaving your doors open to advanced cyber threats. Barracuda Next Generation Firewalls provide all the core features of enterprise firewalls and UTMs, but without hidden costs and deployment hurdles, making owning a big business firewall no big deal for your SMB. Reclaim your network. Try a Barracuda Next Gen Firewall risk-free at barracuda.com/firewalls.
The most hyped movie of the year, Star Wars: The Force Awakens, has begun its rollout in the U.S. There's no doubt it'll be a smash hit. Question is, can the hype be enough to redeem what's been a disappointing year at the box office for movies in general? More from Matt Pressburg, Los Angeles correspondent for International Business Times. Matt, what happened this year?
Well, it's interesting because Warner Brothers usually comes out with big hits. You know, almost every year they have several movies in the top 10, and this year's biggest Warner Brothers film was San Andreas, which is only number 18 this year. So that's one studio that usually comes with big superhero movies that really didn't have anything that captivated the audience this year.
Wow. All right, so does that mean, for example, that Warner Brothers suffered losses, or just expectations were too high, or what?
Expectations were a little disappointing. Next year they have the big Batman versus Superman movie, which probably will be the number one movie this year. So it's probably more of a blip, just kind of a bad timing for their big blockbuster hits this year. But, you know, it really did leave the box office missing, you know, some revenue that it typically counts on.
Yeah, those are some big numbers. Wow. All right, what else was a big swing and a miss?
interesting. I mean, we have Hollywood coming. The holiday season's coming up, where Star Wars is obviously captivating a lot of attention. But usually, there's some other movies that are kind of sure things, whether it's a family comedy, you know, a big superhero movie. But you know, the other big movies this holiday season are Concussion and The Big Short, which are sort of, you know, more cerebral topics. We're talking about brain injuries, mortgage-backed securities, and those have big casts with Will Smith and Brad Pitt, but it's hard to say just how broad the appeal of those movies will be to, you know, the wide holiday season audience.
Right. All right, so then along comes Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and now what, Matt?
And now Star Wars looks like it's going to smash records. I mean, Jurassic World had $209 million opening weekend earlier this year. That's the all-time high. Star Wars is predicted to go as high as $220. And, you know, I've been looking at returns out of Europe, and they're really exceeding expectations by a lot. I mean, they're setting not only December first-day records, but in France and Italy, actually, you know, regardless, you know, just first-day records regardless of season, which is really impressive for the winter.
Well, we're speaking with Matt Pressburg, L.A. correspondent at International Business Times. His piece is called "Can The Force Awakens Save Hollywood from a Disappointing 2015? All right, so the blockbuster that this Star Wars is going to be, does it help other movies sort of indirectly? Like if somebody goes to Star Wars The Force Awakens and says, that was good, you know what, let's catch something else tomorrow night, we had a good time. I don't know, is that the way it works?
It actually might. The interesting thing is that Star Wars is very popular at these IMAX 3D theaters. There's been a lot of money, you know, I'm sure you've seen refurbishing a lot of theaters. They have better seats now, better food options, a lot better screen, better sound. And so we could have the case where people come in, they're very impressed by the whole experience. You know, it sounds great, it looks great, the seat's comfortable. Some of these seats are even, you know, massage seats that have responsiveness, so the movie has an explosion, the seat shakes a little bit, and that audience seems to really love that. And so that's the kind of thing where people come in, they just get excited. The experience, it's a lot better than it used to be with sort of an old seat, not stadium style, you're sitting behind a tall guy, you can't see the movie.
Right.
Now it's a lot better, and the experience could really bring people in to see other movies with the amenities that are in many theaters now.
Right. All right, so to be fair, I asked before about kind of the duds of 2015, which movies actually did pretty well and were not dragging down the rest of the group.
Well, Jurassic World is the one that's shattered all both domestic and foreign box office records. People came out to see that in droves. That did extremely well. Furious 7 did really well, another Universal film, and also Minions. Universal had a very good year between Jurassic World, Furious 7, and Minions. One movie that did really surprisingly well was Straight Outta Compton, which played in about 1,000 to 2,000 fewer theaters than a lot of the big blockbusters. It was also a top 20 film. That one really did well on a per-theater basis. It really captivated the audience.
Thanks, Matt. Matt Pressburg, Los Angeles correspondent for International Business Times.
Did you know that more and more businesses are switching to Vonage? Seems like they know something you don't know, like how they can unify all their offices nationwide on their own private connection to the cloud. Or maybe they're saving tons of headaches by eliminating unwieldy PBX phone systems. Make the switch to better. Call 1-800-5-VONAGE or visit Vonage.com and find out why so many businesses are switching. That's 1-800-5-VONAGE or Vonage.com. Vonage, the business of better.
Thanks for being with us in honor of this weekend's release of Star Wars, The Force Awakens. The website WOW247 is tamping down the hype by releasing a list of the worst pieces of Star Wars merchandise. Number one, Slave Leia perfume, which the site says allows you to carry the distinct odor of a filthy desert palace as you swan about in your gold-plated bikini. Number two, Jar Jar Binks lolly. What could be better than sucking on Jar Jar Binks's tongue? There are better ways, the site says, to get your sugar fix. Number three, Star Wars hand fans. WOW247 says these things are proof that merchandisers can and will turn any handy accessory into something branded and worthless. Number four, Star Wars Christmas album. The best track. What can you get a Wookiee for Christmas? Number five, an R2-D2 aquarium. The site says, let's face it, even the humble goldfish probably does not want to be cooped up inside a bleep-blooping droid all day. And finally, a C-3PO tape dispenser. Unraveling tape from between his shiny metal legs, the site says, is a bit weird. For Bruce Johnson, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening.